Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Pleased to have another episode of the Professional Football Researchers Association podcast as part of the Sports History Network. John Bozica and George Bozica along with you, and tonight we have a very exciting topic to discuss and talk about with a guy that we've had on the show before, and that is Chris Willis, who is the head archivist and producer at NFL Films. And we're going to talk about a topic tonight that I don't know that a ton of people know a lot about, but hopefully we're able to embark some more information on to people and bring them a topic here that will be interesting to them. And Chris, thanks for joining the podcast.
Oh, no, thanks for having me on again. I'm happy to do it and happy to talk about some events, you know, that's coming up or past that that's about football history. So thanks.
Absolutely. And I know that a big part of this topic that we're discussing tonight is about Joe Carr. I know you wrote a great book about him just, I believe, a couple of years ago, The Man Who Built the National Football League. And, you know, when I think of the guy that built the National Football League, my post-1960 NFL brain always thinks of Pete Rozelle. But after reading some of the key points about Joe Carr, he was much more instrumental than people want to give him credit for, wasn't he, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. I think his names somewhat have gotten, you know, I wouldn't say forgotten, but, you know, not quite as well known as some of those names that are in the Hall of Fame, like, you know, George Halas and Tim Mara, you know, Art Rooney, Burt Bell, some of the pioneers and founders and executives who helped build the league. Well, Joe Carr was the NFL president, you know, from 1921 to 1939. So pretty much the first two decades. He replaced Jim Thorpe, who was the first president, who was used mainly for his name because he was the greatest football player. But he wasn't an executive like Joe Carr, you know, who had ran a football team, Columbus Panhandles. But he sort of built the foundation of what the NFL sits on today, you know, with the Constitution and bylaws, you know, rules and regulation. You know, just sort of the standard that the league, you know, knows today. Well, he helped build that, you know, and that helped him be a charter member, you know, of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1963. So his two decades, you know, was very instrumental in helping the league, you know, become a business and become a sort of big time, you know, sport. So I think the name does get forgotten a little bit, but should be up there when you're talking about the pioneers of the 20s and 30s that helped build the sport.
Yeah, Chris, and I know that as a result of your research on Joe Carr, I know just a couple of weeks ago on Saturday, September 20th, you took part in a ceremony in Columbus to basically honor the site of the first NFL office, and also honor Joe Carr, and if I pronounce her name right or incorrect, please correct me. The NFL's first secretary and also first female employee, Kathleen Rubidoux. Did I say that right?
Yep, you got it, Rubidoux.
Yeah.
Some people want to say Robidoux, but it's Rubidoux. Yeah.
Got it. Can you tell us about your involvement? Then we'll get into the story of her and additional into Joe Carr. Can you tell us the story behind your involvement in that that plaque that's now in basically downtown Columbus, right across from the State House.
Yeah, it was something that I was extremely proud to be a part of. I mean, it was somewhat of a goal of mine, you know, going back, you know, a decade or so of once I realized that the first NFL office building, because Joe Carr was from Columbus, Ohio, he brought the headquarters there in 1921, but they did not have an official address or office building until 1927. And he got a two-room office up on the 11th floor of 16 East Broad, which was right across the street, like you said, from the State House, in the same corner, you know, of where you had the Ohio Theater, you know, the Neal House. Like, so it was a very popular, you know, prestigious, you know, corner of office that in downtown Columbus. And so as I was doing the book, you know, and doing research on Carr, I found more information about the office, and I was like, wow, this is, you know, my hometown. I'm from Columbus, you know, and it was just tremendous research to find and to know that building, which was one of the first skyscrapers, so to speak, you know, it was 12 floors, and in Columbus that it, you know, maybe 7-8 years ago, it was designated as a landmark building. So, you know, so over the years, you know, I was glad it wasn't going to get knocked down and all that stuff. So, so I've worked with the owner of the building, which at the time, you know, 10 years ago was the Schottenstein family in Columbus, and they had it vacated. You know, there was nothing, it wasn't being used, you know, they didn't want to do anything with it. And so over the years, there was eventually an owner whose name is Michael Tomko of the Tomko Company, you know, bought the building and wanted to redo it as its original use, which was an office building with office use. And that's what he did. And so I got to know Michael a little bit. He was encouraged of maybe doing something to honor the NFL and to honor Joe Carr. And a plaque, you know, historical marker or plaque was what we were discussing. And but the real, you know, nuts and bolts came together when Ryan Vessler, who's from Homage Athletic Apparel, they do T-shirts and they tell stories through their T-shirts. And they just started doing NFL T-shirts. You know, they did the Jason Kelce show this past year. And Ryan's from Central Ohio too, and he thought this was just the greatest story. Like, wait, I mean, the office building is still there. So he actually got in contact with me, and I, you know, we talked it with Michael, and we all three came up, you know, to say, hey, look, you know, Michael wanted to do something like a plaque. Ryan and Homage was going to be the sponsor. They put up the money to pay for it, and then I was trying to recruit the families to sort of be honored. Because I, you know, it's like, okay, the Carr family, and then Kathleen Rubidoux, who was the first woman to work in the NFL. There was only two people in that office. It was two rooms on the 11th floor, and that was it for 1920s. You know, pretty much the first two decades was, you know, two people really working there. So, so that's what was my involvement. And like I said, this you know happened, you know, at the beginning of this year. So it all sort of snowballed, and then we eventually came up with a date on September 20th, a couple Saturdays ago. We did it during the Ohio State bye week, so that was key in Columbus, Ohio. But it came together, and then we had the families there. We had the mayor, Columbus mayor there, Joe Horgan of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and a couple of the Hall of Fame guys came down and they spoke. So it was a really nice, you know, event that we, you know, put together, but it all started at the NFL office building. It, like I said, still survives, and it's right there in downtown Columbus.
Chris, how cool was that for you? I mean, you're a Columbus guy, as you said. I mean, I know how much you love Ohio State. I know how much you love the area. What does that mean to you to be able to put that piece of history in a city that means so much to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, personally, like I said, it was one of the coolest thing that I've been a part of. You know, I mean, I grew up in Columbus. My dad had a used bookstore downtown, so I actually walked past that corner, hundreds and hundreds of times, thousands of times probably. And you know, you catch the bus there, and you just not realize that NFL history is right there. So for the last 30 years, I've worked for the NFL, and so that building became even more important to me and what it represented, So to see a plaque go up, in front of the building. So now anybody that walks by it or goes into that building can read about the history of the NFL office being there, and Joe Carr, Kathleen Rubidoux, and her history. So it means a lot. Like I said, it's one of the coolest things that I've been able to do, in doing research, or being with the NFL, sort of, to be, and like I said, you sort of knock on wood, hey, that might be there, a long time after I'm gone, that the people will still know, and like you and George, like, we're big NFL fans, we're big football fans, we watch the games, there's a game on tonight. So like, we watch the games, we're passionate about it, we're passionate about the history, we're passionate about the game now, like, well, this is where it got started. This is the reason, we have this big payoff of being able to enjoy games, enjoy the history, is where this, office started. So that's why it means a lot to me. And like I said, being in my hometown and being part of that history too, meant a lot to me. So it was very cool to do.
Yeah, and I think too, it brings an appreciation, as you sort of mentioned, to Joe Carr, because I remember when I read your book, a few years back, I mean, it seemed like every other page I was saying, wow, because he was such a visionary in terms of laying the foundation for, the modern NFL, in terms of, moving it from a small town league to bigger cities, designing it sort of after Major League Baseball, realizing and sort of being prophetic that, it would be one day, bigger than baseball, that, it would eventually move indoors. There were just so many things that he laid the foundation for, and it's I think it's really great that he's being, remembered in this way, because I think your book was, really amazing in regard to, bringing those kind of things to light about how he, stabilized the league and brought it into the, sort of the modern era.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I mentioned, I think he's really underrated, even as a charter member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Just like to, when you hear those accomplishments and I think vision, it was a really key word he said, is like, he looked at this stuff and could see it long before anybody else could, like you mentioned, he was talking and you see articles in the 20s, as early as like the mid 20s to the early 30s about, playing indoors, hey, we're close to going indoors and playing indoor football. I mean, he was there, to help start the NFL draft and, all these issues, I think, that you think is all new now, he went through it in the 20s and 30s, stadiums, he wanted to play in state-of-the-art stadiums and like you mentioned, move the game from the small towns. Unfortunately, like Akron and Canton, it needed to be like Major League Baseball. You needed to be in the New Yorks and the Chicagos and Detroit, Pittsburgh, Philly, Washington, these big cities, and you needed financially capable owners to run them too. So, which now, like the Mara family and the Rooney family, House family, they all still own the team, so this was 1925 and 1933 in those years. So he, all the things that he accomplished, he's just second to none. Like, I think there's, John mentioned Pete Rozelle. There's certain guys who were perfect for their era, and Joe Carr was perfect for the 20s and 30s. Burke Bell for the 50s and TV, then Rozelle in the 60s, with the AFL, NFL award and the Super Bowl and, Park Avenue, Madison Avenue and just making it grow, and then, Tagubu and now Goodell with, Goodell's main focus of international football or, international games and flag football. Like, so everybody has sort of the point, and Joe Carr had his, you know, those first two decades of just setting the rules, the regulations, the foundation, you know, the building blocks, and then the other owners over the time and commissioners did it, you know, in their own way. So so that's why his achievements should, you know, like I said, yeah, they should be praised because we enjoy it now.
Chris Willis is our guest on the PFRA podcast, as he is the head archivist and producer at NFL Films. And Chris, you know, this story of him, how do you hope that this will maybe influence a generation moving forward of younger people to know more about the game of football?
Well, I mean, that's always, you know, maybe the benefit of certain things like, you know, an historical marker or a plaque, you know, or even a book, you know, or articles or, you know, documentaries, you know, where, you know, they can live on, you know, and for me, like I said, that's why, you know, going through that, you know, ceremony, like it meant a lot because, yeah, future generations can look at, like I mentioned, if you walk past that building, you could sit there and read it. You know, if you enter the building, hey, wow, this is, you know, this building that I'm entering was an NFL office at one point, you know. And then I look at that corner in Central Ohio, too. You know, it's right across from the State House. So you could have tours, schools go through the State House. Like, it's easy to just walk them across the street and to be able to look at that plaque and to learn, you know, even if you're, you know, 10 years old or if you're, you know, 50 years old, you know, you could still read that and learn. So, so that was the key to trying to get that done. Like, you know, this could be something that, you know, people, you know, can, it's highly visible and people can walk by. And I'll mention one other thing. There's also two photos on the plaque. You know, there's a photo of Joe Carr and there's a photo of Kathleen Groubidoux. And that was important too, when we were putting it together, like, cause you know, we're a visual society even more now, you know, with phones and internet and computers, you know, that could grab your attention too. Oh, who are these two people? You know, one male, one female, and then you start reading and, you know, it can grab your attention. So yes, I'm hoping, you know, future generations, especially younger people, can learn, you know, something, you know, while they even just wait for the bus there.
Chris, I'm reading your book. I think the story of Kathleen, you know, Groubidoux is also sort of compelling and really interesting. I know that she lived in the same neighborhood as Joe Carr, and that's how they sort of knew each other. Can you tell a little bit about her story? Because I think it's really fascinating because even though she was the first female player, first secretary, it seemed from reading your book, she was more than just your normal secretary.
Oh, absolutely. It was one of the sort of little needles in a haystack that you find, you know, I mean, you guys know when you do research, you know, you never know what you're going to find. And so to be able to find information about her, which going in, you know, like I said, I knew a little bit about Carr, but then you find that, oh, wait, he had a secretary and this is her name. And like you mentioned, she was, I mean, she has an amazing story just herself, you know, like you said, she was in the Irish neighborhood, in Columbus. So Joe Carr kind of knew her, but she was right out of high school, you know, so she was 19 years old when she was first hired because Carr needed somebody to do a variety of sort of roles. And so he needed somebody to one, be committed to doing a good job, you know? And so since she was single, I think the other thing that he observed and knew about her was she was sports minded, you know? And I learned that from when I talked to her son, Robert's like, oh yeah, you know, my mom, you know, was a tremendous sports fan and she knew like the rules and regulations. She was a basketball player at St. Joseph's Academy there in Columbus in high school. And so she knew sports, she knew football. So I think that's why Carr hired her. He just didn't say, oh, just give me the first, you know, female or, you know, that I can have as a He actually took somebody that, you know, could be committed, that knew sports, that liked football, you know, could understand what he was maybe trying to do. Because, like I mentioned, there was only two employees in the NFL office. So when Joe Carr was on the road, which he did a lot, you know, for meetings and going to games, he was a baseball executive too. So she had to be there. So she's answering the phone. She's, you know, writing the letter. She's, you know, she did a lot more. She helped with the schedule, players' contracts. And there's one story, you know, that she kind of mentioned in one Columbus Dispatch article, where she would, on Sundays, actually go into work, you know, late afternoon, sit there, get calls from the game officials and referees, who would say, you know, the final score, and she would update the standings and write the scores down. And she would actually walk them down the street, you know, down from the office with their High State Journal and the Columbus Dispatch, and she would give the scores and the updated standings, and they would send it out to the Associated Press, and that would get into, you know, a lot of newspapers around the country, and locally. So she was, by far more than, just what you're maybe typical secretary does at the time. And like I mentioned, when Joe wasn't there, she was in charge, and she would, you know, have to, you know, talk to, you know, George Halas or Art Rooney, you know, who might have a question and things like that. So, so to honor her too, and to bring out more of her story, like I'm even going back now and retracing some of my steps. I've talked to the family. Like, I want to learn more about her and see, you know, what else, you know, I can find that could sort of preserve her, you know, her history in the NFL and stuff like that. So, it was really fun to try to learn more about her.
Does that potentially open up a larger research project, Chris, about women and the game of football?
I mean, there's plenty of stories that haven't been touched, you know. I mean, she's, like I said, she's just one. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't know, like, even the simple, who was the first woman to work for the NFL? And you might not know the name, I wouldn't say she's quite like Jackie Robinson being the first, but she is somebody that, you know, who was, like I mentioned, 19 years old, who was single. This is what she was accomplishing, you know, and now we would be very impressed by that. But there are, you know, that is one of the initiatives that the NFL is very high on. I mentioned two. If you had to talk to, you know, the league office and the commissioner, you know, there are three league initiatives that they like right now. And one is the international games, growing the sport, flag football, because it's going to be an Olympic sport. And, you know, the high schools are picking it up, the states. And it's women in the NFL. I mean, those are the three major initiatives that they would like. So, you know, knowing her history is coming in, hey, and not just her, just some of the other executives, women executives or women roles that have been maybe overlooked and like, oh, wait, you know, who was the first, you know, scout? Who was the first, PR director or certain things like that, those stories can be, discovered right now because that some of them haven't been written yet.
Chris, one more question I have, and then I know George does too, but do you think she deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, that's a tough one. I truly think her story needs to be told a little bit more. And I'm not sure if a bronze bus, did she do enough? I mean, you know, she did work for like 11, 12 years. It wasn't just a 2 or 3 year, situation for her. I have talked to the Hall to get a little bit of her noticed, and the Hall does have an award that they, periodically award. It's called the Ralph Hay Pioneer Award, so I think she could fit into that maybe a little bit more than to try to put her up with, because she would be a contributor, so she'd be going up against like Robert Kraft and Ralph Hay. So that's a little bit tough to put her in that category. Although, you know, where she's definitely a pioneer. She's almost a definition of being a pioneer. So, but I would like to see something, you know, and now that, you know, there is a plaque, you know, and talking to Joe Horgan at the Hall, I think they're more aware of what she has done and her story. So there could be some more conversation and more sort of notice of what she did, and maybe down the road we can get something to honor her.
Yeah, her story sort of reminded me a little bit of Eleanor Kane, who wrote the book Pro Football Broadside, that I saw a piece on her on one of the pregame shows a few years ago. She was one of the first females to find their way into the press box, and she talked, you know, her experiences and, you know, dealing with, you know, some bias and some other things, and how she was able to sort of, you know, cut through that. So it you know, I mean, they're definitely pioneers. Kathleen Rubidoux's story sort of reminded me of Eleanor Kane, and, you know, a little different areas, but I was really reminded of that.
Yeah, Eleanor was, like I said, she broke barriers too. So, those type of stories should be, you know, like I said, we should try to, you know, honor them a little bit more, you know, because if they're coming around now, they're going to be elevated, you know, the Caitlin Clarks of the world and some of these female athletes now that are, you know, changing the game and, you know, changing the perception, you know, of female achievement and things like that, you know. Well, football, especially the NFL, you know, like I said, it's the number one sport and it's been around for over 100 years now. You know, why aren't we honoring, you know, in some way? So, you know, so the Eleanor Kanes and the Amy Trask and, you know, the Kathy Rubidoux, you know, I think there is a path or an avenue that we can do to try to honor, you know, some of these places, because, you know, we do it for their male counterparts for certain things, and let's do it for them, you know, too.
My understanding too is, I know Joe Carr died suddenly of a heart attack in 1939, and then obviously Carl Stork then became the next sort of president of the NFL. Mm-hmm. Operations were in Dayton because he was from Dayton, and then at that point, I guess Kathleen ended up then finally getting married. What was the rest of her story after that?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the sort of amazing part of the story that, you know, I didn't cover it in as much in the book. I think I kind of say, oh, yeah, she went to work. But I did a little more digging there, and it turned out that she actually, because she was still single at the time, she actually went to Dayton and lived in Dayton for roughly a year and a half working for Carl Stork as his secretary, you know. So he did move the office to Dayton. You know, he had an office there already because he had run the Dayton Triangles and had worked for General Motors and the Triangle Company. But she went back there, you know, she's in the 1940 census as working as it says, secretary, Pro Football League. And she lived at the, and it said where she lived, the Loretto, which was a working woman's, you know, like hotel, you know, so she had a room there. So that was, she did that for a year and a half. And then I think once she would visit Columbus every once in a while, she did meet Norman Knapp, who worked for Coca-Cola and some deliveries, you know, in Columbus. So they met and she, you know, she fell in love, and then she ended up getting married and she became Kathleen Knapp. And so she just raised a family, in Columbus, you know. She had two children. One died fairly young, you know, I think around 6, 7, 8 years old. But Robert was her son. So she just sort of became a mom and raised Robert. And then she kind of, once Robert got a little bit older and was able to go out on his own, then she did some more secretarial work for some businesses in Columbus, you know, and then she retired. And so So it was, yeah, it was, I mean, that's the kind of typical, you know, 30s, 40s type of thing. You know, you got married, you know, you stay at home mom, and then you did that. But she did work a little bit afterwards, but she stayed a sports fan. You know, Robert was telling me, yeah, you know, she enjoyed, you know, watching football and enjoyed sports, you know. So that's what I've been able to find out. Like I said, I've reconnected with the family for the event, you know, so I've gotten to know a little bit more of the extended family, you know, some of the grandchildren. You know, Robert had, I think, 4 kids. So, you know, most of them were there. So we talked a little bit more. And so I'm trying to get a little bit more of their stories too, and to know a little bit more about Kathleen. So that's what I know.
Chris Willis, the head archivist and producer at the NFL Films. Chris, great stuff. As always, we always appreciate you joining the podcast. And next time the PFRA has our biannual conference, I'd love for you to do a presentation about Kathleen Rubidoux. I think that would be a really great thing to champion her story. So thanks for telling us about that, and also about Joe Carr, and you know, honoring his legacy and her legacy, and your book. If people want to buy your book about Joe Carr and find out more about you, Chris, where can they go?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. I think it's the easiest way to get it, you know. So there's a hardback version. The paperback version's a little bit cheaper, so I'll plug that, you know. But there is a paperback version of it too, and an ebook version. So, but Amazon's probably the quickest, easiest way to get it.
Hardback versions, and in this economy, the Guardians won't even spend money on a good player. not gonna do that. Chris, we always appreciate your time, and we'll talk again soon on the podcast.
No, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Hi everyone, there's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.